stupid. He comes across in front of me every single time he overtakes. Where did you want me to go off the track?
No! Stop talking to me in the braking zone!
There are three things in life that are certain. Death, taxes, and... Wait, his middle name is Ronald? Welcome back to Motorsport 101. You are the world champion!
That was exciting.
Right, hey guys, Andre Harrison back in again with episode 248 of Motorsport 101. This is part two of a doubleheader recording, so if you're listening to this, chances are you already listened to 247, and hence you know that me going through the general housekeeping of an intro is probably not worth your time. So shout out again to Ryan King, hello.
Yes, I on this episode, I promise not to botch the years that important events in world history happen.
No guarantees. RJ O'Connell, hello, sir.
Trackmania and F1 2020 are good. Also, shout-out supporter of the program, Rezzy, for being a low-key Trackmania monster.
Yeah.
Giving me that work.
Yeah, absolutely. No surprises there. Cam Buckley, hello, sir.
Hello, it's good to see that Team Penske is doing their own Kobe Bryant tribute by taking every race that they're leading, crumpling them up, and throwing them in the trash.
Kobe. And Chris DeHarde, hello, sir.
Hello, hello. We're going to have a lot to talk about, especially with IndyCar, NASCAR, and a bunch of other random fun things. Great being back.
Alrighty. Basically, you can find us absolutely real quick. YouTube and Facebook.com/Motorsport101. Twitter at Motorsport_101. You can find all our handles in our bios for that one as well. Motorsport101.com, our website. And if you like us on Patreon, you can back us there. Patreon.com/Motorsport101. $5 gets you early access to all of our shows. $10 gets you early access. And you can listen to these shows live as they're being recorded in our Discord server. Shout out to everyone that stuck around for the second half of this recording. And after this quick musical interlude, we'll be back to talk about IndyCar at Road America. Yes, his middle name really is Ronald. Shout out to a friend of the show, Elizabeth Blackstock, for telling us that earlier, and that was news to me, and I'm still kind of in shock over that one, so yeah.
It's probably just been on his Wikipedia page, just right. Lying in plain sight for all of us to discover, until one moment where we all need it most. Chris, you weren't at Road America. A lot of people were.
Too many people.
Yeah,
were.
They announced that they were gonna welcome a lot of fans back. I didn't see anything about restrictions on how many people or areas, and I'm like, yeah, might not be a good idea to go in the middle of a global pandemic.
Your Toyota Corolla has to be thanking the pandemic for all this reduction in yearly miles.
Yeah, it's funny. I got the car just over 4 years ago, and I've put 75,700 something miles on it, and it's thanking me right now for not being driven, because it's gone all over the
place.
It's a Toyota, it's gonna last forever. Although, I mean, you could just ask King about the car. He drives literally the same exact make, model, variation of that model and year of car I drive.
Yep. Try the literal exact same
you
car.
Say, you say you say Toyotas last forever. You clearly never watched Le Mans.
Let's be nice. We don't have to go there. I mean, you're not wrong, but you didn't have to say it. I mean, good lord.
Though to be completely transparent, Road America did give a mass to everyone who attended the race.
Oh, good.
It was their choice on whether they wore the mask or not, unfortunately.
What's the point of that then?
They left it up to their own volition, and unfortunately, as we saw in quite a few pictures, a lot of people said, fuck them.
I mean, I knew this was going to happen. I covered one night of Indiana Midget Week back in late June, and I took some pictures of the crowd, which I shared in the Discord server. You might have counted a handful of masks in the entire crowd over at, I think it was Lincoln Park Speedway where I was at over in Putnamville. And it was was really sad because, you know, these same people are going to ask the question, you know, why can't we have the Indy 500? And it's like, it's your fault.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah.
As in the words of
this is your fault that Chris's family can't go to the Indy 500 for the first time in years. Look, years
in the words
years.
Of Batman, it's not for you. It's to protect the people you care about.
My dad made the decision last month that this will be the first 500 that he will miss since 1978 because, you know, him and my mom are both in their mid-60s, and they decided that this year it really was not worth it. I mean, you look at other people that decide not to go. Russell Van Treese, the very first person that spoke during the 2016 Indy 500 intro, that year, the 100th running was his 90th.
Yeah.
He missed out on 2018 because of a fall. Or 2019 because of a fall. Ooh. And this year was going to be his like 92nd or 93rd. And he said, this year I'm not going because of the pandemic. If that guy's not going to go, watch out because something might go down.
Yeah, that says a lot, really.
There's no reason to try and go when, you know, circumstances could make it the last 500 you ever get a chance to go to.
Hey, Man City fans, you like to brag about having 100 points. Scott Ditson's already been there.
Death taxes Scott Dixon and Michael Cannon, racking up their third win.
Ronald McDixon.
Ronald McDixon. But it wasn't all plain sailing.
No, because for a while it looked like my boy Joseph Newgarden was in the catbird seat, ready to take the victory.
He was demolishing the field in the first half of this race. And
until
then he goes in, his team makes a perfect pit stop, and then he stalls it. Twice! As I said...
A double stall!
Penske and their drivers out here just Kobe-ing every opportunity for a win straight into the trash barrel.
Right.
Bang!
What a shot by Kobe! Newgarden was going to absolutely clean the clocks with the field by the looks of it, and then, like I said, he had a double stall in the pits, and that put him back down the order. Tried to get back into play, but on one of the multiple caution restarts we got, he ended up destroying a set of his tyres by flat-spotting them by locking up into turn one. It was just a scruffy race for the pole sitter Newgarden in race one in unfortunate circumstances. And that opened the door for the other guys in the field.
Yes, it did. It opened the door for a couple legends, Scott Ditson and Will Power, to battle for the victory.
More finger trouble in the pit stops. Will Power's leading the race just ahead of Dixon, starts pulling a gap. They come in for pit stops after a caution where Patricio O'Ward just fucking cleaned Connor Daly out.
Remember this, it comes back later.
Yeah, first we had Jack Harvey going off course. Damn it!
You don't know, Jack!
Catastrophic brake failure after, again, this Andretti-Shank combination is fast.
They quit qualifying in the front row!
Was running top five.
Jack Harvey's going to win a race this year if he keeps doing this. They're going to get there. He's got so much pace in that car.
Within two laps of them cleaning up the caution for that, Connor Daly, Patricio Ward, they go into the corner together, and Patricio gives him the mother of all hip checks into the tires. It looked bad.
Yeah, and Daly had a pretty big crash. They go into the pits, and Power's team does the pit stop, and then you have the rear jackman standing there, dick in hand, watching Scott Dixon drive around them.
Quote Will Power, I don't know what happened on the pit stop there.
Yeah,
we had Dixon covered.
If you watch the clip of, they just have the car sitting in the air, all the work is done, and the guy looks back, oh, that's Scott Dixon. Oh, shit! I don't get it.
Like, who doesn't get distracted by Scott Dixon in a racing car? I mean, it's a perfectly natural thing to happen.
It was another in a series of silly errors. And Dixon and Power fought to the flag. Dixon was able to keep track position, despite the fact that half the field lost their minds, and we had, three late cautions?
All right. Yeah, we had three late cautions. The Harvey one, the Daly and Award one, Dalton Kellett.
Dalton Kellett binned it
got,
as well.
Got stuck in the sand trap. Oh, geez. Poor guy just making up the numbers.
Yeah, just a brutal one. When we got green flag running again, Dixon would go on to lead comfortably in the end. Power just did not have an answer for him in clean air. Dixon would go on to win by just over 2.5 seconds. The highlight of the second half of the race for me, though, was the third place man, Alex Palou, on the podium.
Yo! Super Yo. Formula alum!
Yo, Cam, the theme of this discussion of IndyCar this week is going to be watch Super Formula.
Yep, watch Alex Super Palou Formula.
Did a damn good job today coming from 14th on the grid to finish third and doing so while having to hold off a former series champion in Ryan Hunter Ray to get there. That's not an easy task.
Yeah, and Ryan Hunter Ray as well. First really good weekend from him in a long time. It's good to see.
Yeah, great racing from the pair of them. Great to see Ryan Hunter-Reay there in fourth. As mentioned, what to mention, Will Power was in second in the end. Colton Herta, another great drive from him in fifth, leading the Andretti's there as well.
Colton Herta, his hair gets more magnificent every time we see it.
We have a hair replacement in the works. He does have great hair. Santino Ferrucci in sixth. Less said about him, the better. But a good drive from him. Graham Rahal in seventh. Was running as high as second at one point. Just ended up slipping down the order in the second half of the race. Patricio Award in eighth. More on him later. Not now. Sato just behind him in ninth. Marcus Ericsson, tenth for Chip Ganassi. Charlie Kimball, 11th. Simon Pagenaud just wasn't really at the races on this one.
He's so bad in qualifying right now. What happened?
Yeah, he's not looking great out there. Like in 17th in race one. Didn't he stop, was it 20th in race two, Cam?
22nd. Yeah. 22nd.
Yeesh, Pagenaud's qualifying.
He is nowhere in quali right now. His race pace ain't that bad. In fact, his race pace last weekend was really good.
The Alex Rins of IndyCar in 12th place for Simon Pagenaud. Rinus VK in 13th. Joseph Newgarden, as mentioned, his scruffy race would put him in 14th in the end. Oliver Askew, 15th. Zach Veach, 16th. Max Chilton, 17th. Last man on the lead lap ahead of Felix. Rosenqvist in 18th. Alex Rossi, who was, again, bumped off earlier on, just having a wretched time in 19th place for Rossi on that one. And the four big DNFs we mentioned earlier. Dalton Kellett binned it, unfortunately. Connor Daly was yeeted off by Patricio Award. Again, another Hamilton hip check on that one, if you want to make the jokes about that one. Marco Andretti had a mechanical breakdown. They had trouble towing him off the track at one point, poor guy. Just sums up his weekend, really. And Jack Harvey, as mentioned, colossal brake failure going into turn one. His black and pink livery is now brown. He was in 23rd.
Yikes.
Big yikes.
You want to know some big yikes, though? Alexander Rossi at this point is sitting 22nd in the standings, so by the time we get to race two, the following morning, he is being interviewed by James Hinchcliffe for NBC Sports. Hmm. James Hinchcliffe, who is working this week as a pit reporter for NBC and not driving, and Hinchcliffe still ahead of Alexander Rossi in the points.
Oh, that's how bad a time Alex Rossi has had of it in recent times. But, not great for Alex Rossi. A guy that, again, we all consider probably a top two or three guy in the field on sheer performance and talent. But don't worry, he would come good in
the most
race
entertaining driver in North America, in my opinion.
Yeah, talking to Racer Magazine, he told Marshall Pruitt that he pretty much has... He pins his lack of speed down to a lack of on-track running, the fact that there are no practice sessions. Mm-hmm.
Well, in that sense, he's a little bit similar to Kyle Busch in NASCAR, who has been, you know, Kyle Busch is arguably the most talented driver in all of NASCAR, and that shows in what he can do, what we've seen him do for years. But in this year, without a lot of practice to get running on the car to hone the setup, he's just been nowhere, and Rossi's very much the same way.
Indeed. Should we get into race two?
God, race two. Again, let's continue the theme. Watch Super Formula. Because that's from where our two protagonists of this story. Well, it was looking like it was just going to be one, and it was just going to be one very commanding first victory for Patricio Award. So let's lay out the scene for you. This time last year, he is, he's doing his one and only Formula 2 appearance as a newly minted Red Bull Junior in between missing the Indy 500 in his first action as a Red Bull Junior and a half season of Super Formula.
This after having a Harding Steinbrenner seat until Mike Harding forgot the money.
This after his the man with him on the front row, Colton Herta. It's a Patricio Award Colton Herta front row, just like Indy Lights in 2018. 2017, he's in IMSA's prototype challenge. You know, the proverbial punching bag category of the IMSA WeatherTech series.
Talk about a tumultuous couple of career paths.
Yeah, 2016, he was just running on race weekend to race weekend deals just to be in what is now Indy Pro 2000.
And Road America is where his season fell apart in 2016, because that year he won like five out of the first six races, and then starting at Road America, his season just went on a complete nosedive, and he lost the title that year to Aaron Tielitz. With the scholarship money he would have won that year, he would have gone to Indy Lights in 2017. Instead, he had to go to IMSA for a year and then went to Indy Lights in 2018 and win the title there for Andretti Autosport.
So suffice to say, Patricio has been through a lot. A lot. And this day, it was looking like he was about to break out in a big way with his first win, because he was only giving up the lead during the pit cycles. He led 43 of these damn laps out of 55. Mm-hmm. This was awesome.
Enter King Felix.
Though, we should mention, he did start the race on pole, and he won pole in a weird session where qualifying was at, what, 10 a.m.?
Really? 10 a.m., and we didn't mention it. Once again, going with the theme of Penske doing everything they can to not win, Newgarden was looking very fast until he had an issue on his car.
I would also like to point out that as we were coming off the high of Lando Norris's fifth place finish in Styria, was also about the same time that Pato took pole position. So everything is coming up McLaren.
Yeah, and I mentioned Pato starting on pole because it was
bit of a slow getaway.
He was not used to being the pace setter of a rolling start. And that caused a bit of chaos behind him.
Yeah, we got a bit of a bunch up at the start.
It was a bunch up at the start, multiple incidents of cars going free wide. So you had a feeling someone was going to get tagged, and unfortunately the poor victim was Ryan Hunter-Reay, who was tapped. He spun, he's going into the gravel trap sideways at 100 miles an hour. Thankfully he was okay. There was a second car caught up in a turn 2 incident as well, because...
No, before that, in a separate incident, Jack Harvey also spins.
Harvey spins as well. Sorry, I forgot to mention that. Thanks, King. And then at turn 2, like, Will Power and Graham Rahal bump wheels.
Power was just attracting people like a magnet.
Yeah, Power was the person who set Hunter-Reay around.
See, I'm gonna say, into turn 1, I don't know. I feel like if you watch it from the front, it looks like Hunter-Reay squeezes Power.
But it's hard to squeeze someone who is completely behind you.
Yeah, right. he was fully alongside.
So right within a split second, Power hooks Hunter-Reay. At the same time, Ferrucci hooks Harvey. They come to the net's corner. Power and Rahal bang wheels. Rahal dips just enough on the grass to spin the tires and pinball off of, I want to say, is that...
Felix Rosenquist,
was that our...
Yeah, it was Rosenquist.
Oh, funny.
Yeah, it was
so,
King Felix.
Just a big old mess.
Yeah, pretty much... Hunter-Reay goes off in a direction that no one expects anyone to go off of this track, so he goes straight into a concrete wall. So he's done.
Yeah,
he's done. Graham Rahal. Graham Rahal kind of got hip-checked by Power, which wouldn't have been that bad, because you see that all the time in IndyCar, only he got on the curb, lost it on the curb, and hooked the end of a concrete wall with the left rear of his car.
And the wall, we should say, the wall was jutted out towards the track to leave a lane so that safety trucks could leave that part of the track. I think it was at the exit of turn three is when Power and Rahal got into it. So they were closer to turn four, and Rahal hit just the very edge of that concrete wall where the safety trucks are allowed to get out behind there to go, you know, grab cars that are spinning. But that wall, that wall did at least $100,000 worth of damage to Graham's car, if not completely tubbed it. The way he hit that thing, it hurt. It looked like it hurt, but Rahal got out of the car.
The worst possible angle, wasn't it?
It really was the worst angle. But Rahal got out of the car and said he felt fine after the incident.
If you remember, if you watch NASCAR, if you remember Mark Martin's incident where his car got impaled on the end of the pit
at
road,
Michigan.
Very similar to that. Very similar crash to that.
But though, thankfully, again, the road course is designed in a way that the opening is always in the opposite of the direction of travel.
Car was wiped out. Rahal was okay. Until the post-crash interview where both he and Ryan Hunter-Reay kind of went off on Will Power just a little bit.
Will Power actually got, he got himself a penalty restart at the back of the field, and then he spun just as we went back to green.
Not a good day for Will.
No. No, but as we got to the climax of the race, Pato O'Ward is being gunned down at the end of the Grand Prix by King Felix. And the brilliant crescendo we got was with two laps to go, they are racing side by side all the way through the infield section of the track. And honestly, I was bricking it for one moment because I thought, Pato's not going to clip him at the same corner he did daily yesterday, did he? Thankfully, Pato yielded. Felix goes round the outside on that right-hander just before the dip.
The final stint was set up by the team. I don't quite understand this. They put Pato on used soft tires.
The soft and option tire. Rosenquist had newer, harder Blackwell prime tires.
Yeah, and the tires just went off on Pato. And
if I may say, that's the exact same scenario that Felix had when he was going against Scott Dixon at Mid-Ohio last year. He was on blacks and Scott was on reds.
And Rosenquist lost by literally a nose.
And speaking of Connor Daly, he was involved in that last stint.
Remember how Connor Daly got sent careening into the Shadow Realm by one Patricio O'Ward? he decided he was going to pay back the favor. He came out after a pit stop right behind, or he came out
right ahead of Patricio O'Ward.
He had let Pato by.
And then got right up on his ass and chased him around for what?
Come up with Daly like in his rookie year where he didn't get out of a driver's way? Because if you don't know, North American etiquette when it comes to being put your first lap down is a little bit different. Is that it's generally more accepted that you can race to stay on the lead lap.
Right.
Yeah, because unlike in Formula One, if a safety car comes out in Formula One, everyone gets to go past the safety car and get back on the lead lap.
Cars can overtake.
That's not the case in North America. If you're a lap down, you're a lap down, no matter if the safety car comes out or not.
Right.
Meaning that it is very important you remain on the lead lap.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Connor, he was well within his rights to fight, but he took it a bit far where he made it a point to make Pato's life a little tougher than otherwise.
Yes, so I think it's important to note that when he came out of the pit stop on fresh tires, he did let Pato by. He gave Pato a chance to drive away. Only problem is Pato on used tires and Daly on fresh tires. Obviously, Connor was going to be faster.
Right.
Didn't Daly himself say that, like, hey, I wasn't trying to hold him up?
Yeah.
Well, of course he would have said.
He ended up driving away by like 10 seconds and actually gained two positions by unlapping himself in the last few laps.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, more the proof exchange that Danny was obliged to do it.
Yeah, and the exchange of getting past Patricio definitely cost Pato some time, kind of dropped him into the clutches of Felix. And then, as you said, they went side by side. Pato was on full oppo out of one of the corners, squirming next to Rosegrist.
I was worried he was gonna take both of them out. He was gonna take himself and Relix out.
This is going to be an airplane crash if these two make contact.
Right.
Screams and Mimo.
I should also preface this by saying this was actually a lot closer than what it could have been. Felix's last pit stop, there was a mistake made, or second pit stop, there was a mistake made, and it cost him like five
or
six seconds.
Not the first one either.
So,
not the first one. Multiple mistakes in the pits, and also poor Felix wasn't great with in-laps that day. He would always lose time in the pit stop exchange and then have to run Pato down.
Right. But, like I said, it crescendoed at the end. It came through.
Oh, such a good pass.
What a good moment. You get vibes of when Dario Franchitti, after a kind of tough rookie year, and Rosenquist was rookie of the year, but you get the vibes like when Dario won his first race, that kind of opened the floodgates for him. There's a similar feeling going on with Felix now that he's finally got that first W on the board.
Well, he's always had the speed. He's just never quite been able to put it all together. Now he has. Now he knows how. Yeah.
Indeed.
And, like, it wasn't just a good day for Rosenquist. A lot of other younger drivers outside of Rosenquist and O'Ward really had their day in the sun this weekend.
Are we allowed to count out Xander Rossi as one of those young, up-and-coming drivers?
Not quite. Not anymore.
No, but
maybe a couple years ago. And also, notice how we didn't mention Scott Dixon. Scott Dixon was having a pretty quiet day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so
you mean to tell me Scott Dixon didn't win?
Scott Dixon not only didn't win, he was having a bit of a quiet day, just running, you know, fifth, sixth place. And then he pulled a Newgarden and stalled it in the pit lane.
Yeah, stalled in the pit lane, and that caused him to be the last Chip Ganassi driver in a three-car Ganassi lineup, which is, that's something you would never hear or even consider, even this season.
It's like when, he went undefeated before this. It's like at the Rolex 24, on average, he was the slowest driver in the Wayne Taylor car. Scott Dixon, the slowest driver of four.
Let's big up Marcus Ericsson for going 16th to finish 4th. That's his best day in a while.
That's his best race in IndyCar, I'll say.
I would say so. Yeah. Probably even more so than the podium he got at Detroit last year.
Yeah. Because Road America, like just the way that the track is, it rewards drivers that get the strategy right. And yeah, he got everything 100% right to finish 4th. So yeah, definitely a great job to Marcus Ericsson, driving for the best team name in all of IndyCar. Husky chocolate chip Ganassi racing.
You'll love to see it.
Husky chocolate chip.
You know they probably had a deal with more money on the table, but they took that one for the meme.
Oh yeah. Sometimes
I think it's wild that Colton and Santucci finished 5th and 6th in back-to-back races.
That's kind of funky. Nuts.
I think it's wild we live in a world where 3 years ago we were shock that Ganassi contracted down from three cars to just one, and now they expanded back to three, and they're way better.
Yeah, I think that back then they were just overextending themselves. I think they've got the people in place now. They've got the right team structure where three cars isn't a burden anymore.
Right, yeah, because I'll say this, Felix Rosenquist is a step better than Charlie Kimball in the sunset of his career and Matt Chilton.
And not only that, you're looking at a situation where you've got Michael Cannon joining Scott Dixon, you know, the ultimate game shark cheat code of any race engineer in IndyCar.
They match each other perfectly.
It works. It just works. Running down the rest of the order real quick, like I mentioned, Felix Rosenquist winning his first IndyCar race ahead of Pato O'Ward of a career-high finish in second. Alex Rossi rounding off the podium in third. Good comeback from him.
Alex Rossi! He actually had a good day. We didn't even mention him.
Yeah, that's why I was saying he is one of those young, up-and-coming drivers finally breaking through with a great result this season in 2020.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that Indy 500, that wasn't your breakthrough. This is your breakthrough.
Nah. Yeah, it was expected. Colton Herta and Satsuichi 5th and 6th. Alex Palou, another solid drive from him in 7th. Takuma Sato 8th. Joseph Newgard 9th. Charlie Kimball in the top 10 again. Good drive from him in the Foyt car. Will Power, scruffy as all hell, was never at the races, in 11th place in the end. Scott Dixon 12th, again not the best drive from Dixon second time round, but not really having very many title contenders actually punish him for it. Funny that in the end. Simon Pagenaud 13th, Rinus Kvikke 14th, Max Chilton 15th, Zach Veitch 16th, Jack Harvey again never really got from the spin out in 17th, Connor Daly 18th. He did stay on the lead lap in the end. Funny that. Marco Andretti and Dalton Keller a lap down in 19th and 20th. Three DNFs. Oliver Askew finished a couple of laps down. He ran off course. And then, of course, the two incidents on the opening lap, Hunter Ray and Graham Rahal failing to finish on those occasions. Championship standings in IndyCar after five races now. It's only four races, isn't it? Yeah, it's four. My bad. Scott Dixon on 173 points. He still has a 54 point lead in the standings right now. as you do. Again, Colton Herta, second in the championship right now at 119.
Mr. Consistency Colton Herta.
Who'd have thunk it? Simon Pagenaud is now joint third with Pato O'Ward on 110 points. Pagenaud ahead on countback. Crazy. Joseph Newgarden in 5th on 106. Marcus Ericsson is 6th in the championship on 93 points. He's ahead of Will Power, who has 92. Again, amazing scenes, limbs everywhere. King Felix up to 8th on 88 points. He's dead level with Graham Rahal on 88 as well. And Santucci in the top 10, 10th place, 87 points. IndyCar returns this weekend at Iowa for not one, but two races. Look out for the unique qualifying format as well, where they're going to do their usual two-lap qualifying session. However, this time, the individual laps will determine the grids for races 1 and 2, respectively. So your first lap will set the grid for race 1, and the second lap will set the grid for race 2. So keep half an eye on that one on Saturday morning. It totally won't be confusing when it's explained in real time. have fun with that. So yeah, Iowa this weekend. Doubleheader on that one. Let's get into the news. We did get a little bit of breaking news before we just started part two. It regards Alex Zanardi. News is it looks like they're going to start the process now of bringing him out of the medically induced coma that he was put in as a result of his injuries and that horrible accident that he had. So not much more to explain than that. Again, they're saying his psychological status is still obviously up in the air, but hopefully, fingers crossed, we see positive signs as they bring him out of this coma. So of course, as always, Forza Alex, we're all with you here at M101, and of course, continued best wishes to Alex and the family up there. The contrast now, because we're going from a serious story to a complete opposite of that, because ladies and gentlemen, we're back for another round of Fight Club.
The scene here for you because what this involves a couple of short track drivers, Doug Barnes Jr., the aggrieved against rival Tyler Hughes. Now, in the wreck that precedes this, Tyler Hughes got pretty shaken up. He has since posted videos on Facebook saying he had a concussion from the initial wreck that started this whole brouhaha, stayed overnight at the hospital. He's back. It looks like he's doing good, which is good to see. So with that laid out, knowing that everybody, for the most part, is going to be fine, 7 seconds of the wild. I don't even know how to describe this. I'm just watching this on a loop.
Three, two, one, play.
Okay, play, and... Whoa! Oh my word!
Yes. That is Doug Barnes Jr. running, balancing himself on the concrete rope, going from the top rope with a missile drop kick through the windshield. Again, it's kind of fucked up that he was doing this while Tyler Hughes was really shaken up. But I'm glad he's okay now, but holy Jesus.
That is a full Chuck Norris style drop kick through the windshield. It's like I'm watching Walker Texas Ranger all over again. Holy shit. That's incredible.
That is prime Daniel Bryan coming off the top rope with a missile drop kick.
Good lord.
That is a Kairi Sane diving elbow.
Amazing. Horribly dangerous and completely irresponsible, but wow. That's
but I love
right
Fig
there.
Newtons.
That's commitment right there. Oh, Lord.
Motorsport 101 watches Talladega Nights coming eventually. We also had additional fisticuffs in NASCAR's All-Star Race, which is not at Charlotte, but at Bristol Motor Speedway with limited crowds in attendance. But this actually takes place before the main event. This happens in the All-Star Open, where the three-stage winners, plus the fan vote winner, automatically advance into the main show. But unfortunately, what are the odds on favorites to advance? Our good friend Darryl Wallace Jr., a.k.a. Bubba Wallace, was knocked out of the proceedings early after he was dumped by noted former Champ Car guy Michael McDowell.
Yeah, this was... I mean, typical Bristol short track racing, and then McDowell's just like, all right, we're going on the straight here. I'm about to take a hard left right into this man's quarter panel. And he Bubba hit driver's side first. Just dumped him into the wall. Bubba had some words to say after this.
This was genius.
Quote, what a joke that guy is.
People say he's one of the nicest guys in the garage. Can't wait for the God-fearing text that he's going to send me about preaching and praise and respect.
I can't wait for the God-fearing text. Wow.
Unfiltered. Even amazing. Better, Bubba Wallace took the bumper of his wreck card and dropped it at the door of Michael McDowell's hauler truck.
Oh, brilliant. That's remarkably petty.
It just like his team owner, yep, living up to
fitting,
his name.
Fitting Richard Petty Motorsport, yes, and being petty.
It should be noted, Bubba was pretty much at the top of the list to win the fan vote and transfer over to the full race. Only issue is, you need to have a car capable of being in the All-Star race.
Yeah. You need to have a car.
Yeah, you need to have a car to win the fan vote. Because he got wrecked out, he didn't have.
Although it came out later on that Clint Bowyer was actually leading the fan vote before this accident, anyway. But
yeah, Bowyer got a late surge. Yeah, just a tough week all around for Bubba. Because Bristol attracted the kind of crowds that believe that coronavirus is just a leftist conspiracy theory. They were being really shitty towards him, cheering when he got wrecked.
Yeah, there was, there was next to no masks in the stands. There was multiple N-bombs chanted down from the stands when he got wrecked out. NASCAR, talk the talk. Now you need to fucking take action.
You gotta walk the walk again. You gotta walk this harder.
Yeah, because that is un-fucking acceptable.
No.
And worst thing is, this race was pretty good. Chase Elliott won and said afterwards, what are you gonna do with your $1 million? I'm gonna have them back up a Mountain Dew truck to Ryan Blaney's house and have them unload 14 pallets of Dew.
Dude, they gave him a sword when he won the race.
A sword?
Yeah. And then afterwards tweeted the Dr. Evil gif of $1 million.
Oh, excellent. That's outstanding.
We have no choice. With this point of Chase Elliott, we have no choice but to stan a god.
I think NASCAR had the best tweet about this because they showed him in Victory Lane with the sword saying,
"Oh god damn it."
You know, Chase Elliott finding out that his car is about to be, finding out whether his car is cake or not.
There it is. And this one wasn't full of razor blades.
And NASCAR, you know, took the full opportunity of having this non-championship all-star race to experiment as much as possible.
What, you mean like a package that actually, you know, makes the cars race better, wheel-to-wheel?
No, we gotta make the cars glow.
Oh, my God.
Do y'all
remember
Need for Speed Underground and its sequel, Need for Speed Underground 2?
Riders on the Storm.
Yeah, they added neon to the back of these cars, color-coded to each manufacturer, and...
Why?
Yeah, it was so distracting that it took away from them moving the numbers further back towards rear wheels.
No, it didn't. I'm going to be sick. The numbers looked so fucking stupid. The only reason they did this, they didn't do this for stylistic choices.
They did it for sponsors to get
more advertising space on the cars. The only one I really liked was Matt Kenseth's car. But because Matt Kenseth drives the McDonald's car, therefore is cursed, he's not allowed to win.
He's not driving a McDonald's car in IndyCar, therefore he is cursed never to win a race.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Though, in fairness, they did make one substantial change that affected the racing. They introduced that good old short track staple of the choose cone.
I don't know what the choose cone is. I'm not versed in American short track racing.
Okay, so RJ, you know how NASCAR double file restarts work. Where,
yeah, I know that.
You know, the lineup, you have first and second on the first row, third and fourth in the second row, and so on and so forth. With the choose cone, obviously the leader normally gets to choose what side of the track they start on. Mm-hmm. With the choose cone, everyone gets to pick what side of the track they start on.
Oh.
meaning that, like, hey, one side's faster than the other, so maybe first, second, third, and fourth all take that side. Well, if you're the fifth place guy, you could choose to just play it safe, start in fifth in line on the faster side of the track, or you could take the risk of going to the other side of the cone and starting alongside the leader on the bad side of the track.
Can we get this in F1?
I would love it in F1.
The thing is, this actually worked pretty okay. We had some interesting restarts with this.
Mm. Yeah.
So, sounds interesting. Maybe not the worst idea. You know, maybe if they move the numbers back, I'll be more supportive of it.
I would be here for it. I would love to see some of this weird... Look, it's 2020. It's time to get weird. And it's time to vote out our shitty governors who are making this pandemic worse. All right,
Just to follow up on that, you know what? You'll get our Talladega Nights watch party when everyone wears a mask.
You know what? I can't argue with that. So shall it be written, so shall it be done.
Right. F1 news. Got a lot of extensions of existing deals.
It seems like the Mercedes camp are settled in.
Yep. Valtteri Bottas to 2021.
Though we should point out, those are rumors and speculations. Bottas has not been officially
monolith.
Yet.
It's monolith official.
I spoke to Merva Callio about this on Fast Talkers. It is apparently all but confirmed. Apparently in the next couple of rounds they'll get it dotted the I's and crosses the T's, but they are very far along. Expect it to be done in the next couple of weeks, basically, is what I've been told.
Now, George Russell and Nicholas Latifi at Williams, that is official. That is confirmed. They're going to stay another year in 2021. That's good for Williams that they have that continuity, although some people would feel like, you know, maybe George deserves a seat at a higher-up team.
No Remedian. Sorry. Yeah.
classic Mercedes leaving their young drivers to rot at a lower team. Hopefully this time the team doesn't actually die. Sorry, Pascal.
Esteban. But those
those signings are all well and good. It's good that George Russell and Nicholas Latifi are going to bring some continuity. Obviously, Bottas is the smart pick to Mercedes, but that means no room at the end for Vettel. And he's not coming back to Ferrari.
Ah, but you see, he is in contract talks with Mercedes, too.
Man, when that Bottas deal is official, I'm going to lose that bet.
Hi, Ken.
Remember, it's $50. It's $50 to the mutual aid charity of your choice.
Okay.
Start writing the check.
No. Here's the thing, King. There's a way out, because if they just bring a W10E next year, then he is out of Mercedes.
Sebastian Vettel is reportedly in talks to join Aston Martin with 2021. It came up in Build magazine that apparently Racing Point can trigger an out clause to break things off with Sergio Perez to bring in Vettel, because that would also coincide with Racing Point becoming Aston Martin in 2021. Mm-hmm. And they would like to have a splash to introduce that era of the team.
Yes, and while Vettel racing for Aston Martin Mercedes, I won't consider it losing the bet. I'll still make the donation.
No, wait. So if that happens, then I think you both have to split the bet.
We both have to split the bet.
King, I'm down for that if you are. I'll call it a wash if he ends up at Racing Point. We'll both do $50 each.
No, I just like how that is the name now.
Yeah.
Tracing point.
But it's not going to be for much longer. Again, it's going to be Aston Martin.
Yeah.
Right.
AKA Faxton Martin.
Well, if you think AM is two-thirds of AMG.
Well,
oh my
works.
God, it's all connected.
Oh,
so Dre, you had some feelings on this.
Again, I wrote a written piece about this on the website where I debated with myself, the best debate partner you could possibly have on the matter. This sucks. And I am a Sebastian Vettel fan, and this sucks. Like, there's a reason I called it Alien versus Predator, and the reason why I called it that is because, as that movie quotes, whoever wins, we lose. And I don't want to see Sebastian Vettel in an Aston Martin at Sergio Perez's expense. I just don't. Perez, I've mentioned this before, is one of the drivers of the decade. He has been the undisputed king of the midfielders for most of this decade. And let's not forget, if you want to go into a really emotional standpoint about this, he's the beating heart of the Racing Point team. And let's not forget, he saved them last year when he put the team in administration through his sponsors so that they could basically start over and keep the jobs on the table, basically. Let's not forget...
That sounds a little weird. I can explain it. Yeah, so what he did, there were entities that were trying to have, at the time, Force India, wound up immediately. Kill the team, kick them out of F1, that's it.
Yeah.
What Perez did was put it... was, you know, he hadn't been paid, his sponsors hadn't gotten their return on investment, so he put them in administration and then deliberately did not have them wound up.
Right.
Effectively deadlocked the team with his own sponsors to make sure that they didn't collapse.
Yeah.
Sergio
indeed.
Perez did a lot of good for this squad, and it also helps that, like, he makes a case for being king of the midfield every single year. We know he's good for the odd podium every now and then. Probably good for one this year, assuming, you know, they don't have to rewrite the whole car.
Yeah, he was good for one in the first race until, of course, the safety car came out and he was stuck out there on dead tires.
Yeah, he was one of the few guys that were hung out to dry on that strategy. But, look, and we saw it in Styria. He was the fastest man on track in the second half of that race. He was gobbling time out of Alex Albon lap on lap and set multiple fastest laps until Hamilton
actually gave
a shit. He was
quicker than Verstappen for a portion of that race.
Yeah, he was super fast. Now, I said on Twitter, that was the best he's driven since 2012. Don't get me wrong, it's probably the best car he's had since 2012.
I think it's the best car he's had, period. After all, he did win a championship last year.
Yeah, so, you know, call it what you will, but the man is super fast. He's
when he
he's
has
a con- He's a consistently great driver, and more importantly, he, by all accounts, he's a very good bloke. And
when he has the equipment under him, he will get the maximum out of that equipment every time.
Yeah, yeah. And as even as the most heartfelt of Sebastian fans that most people know, I would not. It would not sit right with me if Sebastian took his spot. Because we all know that Lance Stroll's not going anywhere. Like,
but what if Lawrence Stroll disowns his son?
You see, that's kind of... well, there is that. Sebastian Vettel, you are my new son. There is the fact that it's not just Lawrence Stroll. It is also other investors who have bought into that team. It is the actual Aston Martin brand, of which it's not just Lawrence Stroll who owns it.
Yeah.
And there's kind of the swirling rumor that maybe they will demand that Stroll either be dropped to a reserve role, which actually might be good for him.
So that actually plays a parallel. Because just to play devil's advocate, if we were looking back at the first year of Alfa Romeo Sauber and their lineup of McLaren Ericsson, Ericsson got demoted to a reserve driver for Kimi Raikkonen. And Ericsson was the most tenured Sauber driver since Kubica and Heidfeld.
Yeah, and had sponsorship, had, you know, his sponsors had interest in that team.
Big money. They were putting eight figures a year into that team, allegedly. You know,
Or I don't think Stroll would get a drive at another team for obvious reasons. I don't need to get into it.
No.
But at the same time, it could, if the theoretical lineup would be Vettel and Perez with Stroll as a reserve.
It's a very strong team.
Stroll could learn a lot from those two.
He may not learn as much as you would in like the back, because it's different from when you could just test unlimited. It's not like when Alonso was Renault's reserve in 02. It's not like when Massa was Ferrari's reserve in 03. It's different.
The thing is that if Lance Stroll was a reserve, he would have the opportunity to race in different categories that wouldn't have as a full-time Formula 1 driver.
Yeah, we've seen him. He was a damn solid sports car driver in his few appearances there.
Yeah.
Yeah, we forget he's a Formula 3 champion. We conveniently forget this because daddy's money.
Drove with Chip Ganassi and
made a good account for himself.
Yeah, 2016 Rolex 24, and you know the car wasn't competitive. It was the Ligier Honda show that year. But he compared very well to drivers such as Scott Dixon.
Right.
In the same car.
Just, you know, say they do sign Sebastian Vettel. There's no guarantee that'd be a long-term deal. It could just be 2 years until the regulations change.
It could just be one and done.
Yeah, just, you know, like, I think if Vettel signs a deal, it's going to be 2 years. One, you know, obviously next year. Two, first year in the new regulations. Mm-hmm. If things turn out well, maybe he wants to stay, or maybe he moves on to something else. Then you have Lance Stroll as a reserve, and you just slot him back in.
Sure. There's flexibility options here, but I still find it, like, again, there's been like a civil war on Twitter between Perez fans and Vettel fans, and I'm just like, guys, it can be both.
The Mexican government got involved in this.
Yeah, you know, I agree with you that it would be, as I'm a fan of Vettel, it would be a shame if Perez lost his seat. On the other side, if it's a Perez-Vettel lineup, and next year, they're still using the W10, whatever letter it will be at that point, if they don't get caught out by the protest.
If they're Aston Martin, if you're in your first year as a factory team, you want to make a splash like that.
Yeah, you've got big money behind this team. You have what is clearly a very competent technical core.
Right.
Maybe not their own, but whatever.
You have a struggling car company that needs some dope marketing.
Yeah, and you've got a great marketing prospect coming in with a 4-time world champion and the king of the midfield is Draiput. Mm-hmm. And then give Vettel the reins to that car. Do what Ferrari wouldn't do and what Red Bull was very successful doing.
The driver is the most important cog. Listen to your drivers.
Yeah, like, if he goes into that team and he molds it around himself and really directs them forward and up the grid, even if they're not, say, in a championship fight, if he's grabbing podiums and maybe the occasional win out of it, Mercedes falters, that's it's a damn sight better than what he's got at Ferrari right now, now ain't it?
Yeah.
I mean, and, like, grab a couple podiums. Racing Point could do that this year. It just takes,
right,
you know.
Racing Point should have. That right. They're challenging for podiums right now. Like,
yeah, the car on race pace, you know, they qualified like fucking trash in the rain. Right. But in race pace, they are legitimately, like, coming to blows with Red Bull. Even Verstappen's Red Bull.
Exactly. Like, honestly, I think whether Vettel goes to Racing Point might just be in the hands of FIA's technical department.
Yeah, because if they're forced to run the RP19, which had the tub from the RP18, they're probably going to be the worst team in F1.
On the other hand, if it all goes to shit and they still get Vettel, they can have him be the anchor of a lineup at Le Mans.
Yes.
That works.
Because again,
oh, wait. They canceled that program. Shit.
Well, they still got the Vantage GTE, so, or GT3.
The good thing about this deal, at like him going to Racing Point, whether their car is, you know, eligible to run or not, they got that massive factory expansion. They already have money set aside to expand their staff.
They're set.
They're a team on the upswing.
Yeah, and that's always a good thing.
I love it.
There's a lot. There were so many people out there that argued about Carlos Sainz. Maybe it was the right call for him to stay with McLaren over Ferrari. This is back at the end of 2019 because they thought McLaren was on the up and up. There is an argument you could make on that, certainly.
Well, and right now, and I didn't mention this in the last episode when we talked about the race, but Ferrari's only going to be allowed. Ferrari's stuck with this car for this year. If they can't fix it, then they're hosed for 2021.
Not unless they tank for aero concessions next year and the year after.
Even
that.
If they, yeah, but if you've got correlation issues in your wind tunnel, it doesn't matter how much CFD time you've got.
Right. But yeah. Trust the process,
their engine,
Cam.
There's a rumor right now that their engine, as a result of the closing of the loophole in the FIA deal, is 40 to 45 horsepower off of Mercedes.
Hell.
Now,
50 horsepower?
50
and
horsepower.
And the thing is, about that point, the rules may be changing in 2022, but the engine formula isn't. They're stuck with that engine until the next time the engine's rules change in maybe 2025. Yeah.
They're going to have to do what Renault did at in the V8 era when they were down on horsepower and begged for concessions.
Yeah, and look where that got them. Oh, boy. But that's the thing. They get one upgrade this offseason. One upgrade this season after that. And then they're stuck. Now, this set them back. And one thing to keep in mind in F1, and it's the reason why we're getting concessions on the aero side. Everyone is working at the same pace. And in terms of these four engine manufacturers, all four of them, well, maybe not Renault, thanks, Carlos, they all have an endless well of resources to pump into this. They're not just going to slow down. Ferrari, if they can't make the big leaps that they were able to make in 2015 and then 2018 and 2019, they're never gonna get even close to the podium again. They could have the best car in the world. Horsepower, when it's drivable, is free lap time. You're missing 50 horsepower's worth of free lap time.
So yeah, that's the situation. Again, if we get anything more on that, we'll let you know. There was a very awkward press conference we had today with Sergio and Lance there, sitting there talking about the situation. Sergio, you know, made it public that yes, he's been in contact with other teams because I think they kind of know the writing might be on the wall here, and they might be looking for Checo to go elsewhere.
Haas and Alfa Romeo. If I'm Haas,
get that Telmex money.
Yeah.
Get that Telmets money.
Right. Yeah. So more on that as we get it. One more piece of interesting F1 news in the interim. We're going to Mugello, everybody.
All right. Hello. We can't go there for bikes, but we'll go there for cars for the inaugural Tuscany Grand Prix.
1,000, because it's Ferrari's 1,000th Grand Prix if this calendar holds up. Have fun with that.
Wait for that not to backfire.
Oh, there's no way it'll backfire.
Yeah, wait, we've got them and potentially Imola on the cards. You've got three tracks
of disappointment,
all in Italy, all with Ferrari having, by an order of magnitude, the slowest car in a straight line in F1.
on the track's one overtaking spot. Yeah, because Mugello, it is a technical masterclass of a track. It's a great bike track. Everything about this screams this is going to suck for bikes. Yeah, and
for cars.
For cars.
Oh, oh, sorry,
it's great
bad.
For bikes.
Oh, oh my, for bikes, it's oh amazing. My God. For you know how pissed off I am that we're getting a Formula One race at Mugello and not a MotoGP race on one of the blue ribbon events on the calendar for MotoGP?
This is the upgrade and then fuck go back meme.
Yeah, no, I do not want this.
Oh, and also the Russian Grand Prix at Sochi is on the calendar for September 27th.
They're planning to have fans back for that.
Yeah, that's the big part of that story. Oh. That fans will attend the Russian Grand Prix.
Oh,
are they crazy?
Flatty.
Yes. Moving on. They are crazy.
Vladimir Putin.
As you do. So, yeah, also, again, big rumblings that that'll be the next set of races announced. It could be a triple header in the month of October. Potentially the return of Hockenheim, whose stock has never been higher as a racetrack.
Bring back the drag strip of poor judgment.
Right.
Yes, Hockenheim, es Meinheim.
Indeed. there's talk that Imola will be back after the FIA gave its grade one status back. There is big talk about Imola being back. Maybe even early rumours maybe early as tomorrow, as the time of recording on July 16th, about this coming back. So that's a possibility, and also Portimao potentially being on the calendar now. This I want to see with F4 cars.
I've been wanting it for years.
I don't know about this.
Indeed.
why are you questioning it, Cam?
There's a lot of things to question about this year. Man, F1 2020's track selection really didn't age well now, did it?
Nope.
But at least we got Hanoi.
Yep. Yep, Codemasters have already confirmed that no additional tracks will be added to F1 2020.
Oh. Codemasters, genius at play.
That's some bullshit. could I interject with a little bit of breaking news real quick out of World Superbikes?
Sure. Yes, this is the point where Motorsport 101 becomes Bike Live.
Yeah, we got
holy
this.
Shit!
We got this breaking news as of yesterday. Leon Kamiya gone from the Barney Racing Ducati team. Our man and our favorite rider for hire is gone. Allegedly, it is to do with fitness issues and persistent injury concerns, which is ironic. Which is ironic, yes. Given on Bike Live, we used to name him as the Ambulance Chaser. Turns out, Kamiya, yeah. According to Barney, he's been in the ambulance himself too many times, which is just...
Kamiya had a lot of injuries last year.
Yeah, I don't think people realize just how much wear and tear he had. According to Ollie Barstow at Crash.net, it's long-standing shoulder injuries. Apparently, he's been battling fitness issues for more than a year since a crash at Imola, where he was hit by a stricken bike, crashed up by a rider ahead, left him with a serious shoulder injury. Only returning to action for the final few rounds. Yeah, it was a nasty accident, Jesus. Kamiya nonetheless sourced a promising deal with top privateer team Barney Ducati. Pardon me. Those are the guys that had Michael Rubin Rinaldi last year, in case you're wondering. However, a crash in postseason testing prompted another shoulder injury, necessitating two rounds of surgery before Kamiya was forced to withdraw from the opening round over fitness concerns. When he then couldn't take up his place on the bike as recently as June because he couldn't get comfortable on the Ducati Panigale V4R, Barney followed through and cancelled his contract. Despite the sorry situation, the 2009 British Superbike champion maintains this isn't the end of his racing career and has vowed to use the time away to come back stronger. Quote, "It is a very unfortunate situation for both the team and me. I want to be fair to Barney. He's a great guy with lots of passion and he believed in me at the end of last year despite me coming back from injury. Like a bad twist of fate, I again picked up a shoulder injury. Not the same as the last year, but a different issue. Crashing on the Ducati last year during testing in Aragon. Barney stuck with me 100% and in Phillip Island he never put pressure on me to ride and put my health as a first priority when it was too early to come back. During the off time, due to the COVID-19 situation, I gave the shoulder the rest it needed, and as always, in close consultation with my doctors, I restarted training and got my body fitness at the highest level again. I didn't really feel the shoulder anymore, also rode Super Motard without any problem, but at the Misano test end of June again, I started to feel the shoulder. According to the medical experts, the situation is now different from before. There seems no structural problem like last year. I'm continuing tests, and it just seems like a nerve or muscle is trapped and is expected to be solved by dedicated physiotherapy. My doctor is confident that all can be fine for her F, but I can understand it's difficult for the team and their sponsors to again have trust in a medical opinion, while in the last 7 months the prediction was not accurate. We found a mutual agreement for a settlement that gives the team opportunity to enter a replacement rider and me the opportunity to focus on a full recovery without the time pressure of an upcoming test or race. However unfortunate it may be, injuries are part of our sport. I wish Barney and the guys all the best. For me, it's time to get fully fit again. My God, what a classy statement from Leon Kamea. Jesus Christ, he had no business being as nice as he was there. And I didn't. I openly hold my hands up. I did not know it was as serious as that. Where he basically wasn't fully fit for a calendar year. I mean, that's crazy. Like I said, we love Kamea on this show. We nickname him for good reason. We love doing that here. Wish him the speedy recovery and hope he gets a ride for next season, or again maybe even in this season, because it's been quite the silly season antics we've had. Obviously, we mentioned Michael Vandermark last week, we mentioned again this week. Well, by the way, replacing Leon Kamea at the Barney team, Marco Melandri is coming out of retirement.
Back. He's back.
The veteran Italian, quote, ready to cause a big surprise as he gets ready for a return to racing. And I'm like, yes!
In the context of Marco Melandri, that's a scary thing.
Marco Melandri doesn't give a shit. He's 5'5" of pure anger.
I'm gonna say, are we just gonna have just every bike in the gravel? Is that gonna be the surprise?
Leave Marco alone. I will not be tolerating Marco.
I like Marco, but goddamn, that needs to chill.
He's a nutter, but we love him for that. He's 37 years old now, and he's going to be on a Panigale V4R with the Barney team at the end of the season. He said, quote, speaking about the shock comeback, Melandri said, the situation was quite surreal. In normal conditions, I never thought I'd come back. Then it seemed like fate chose me. This long and quiet period has regenerated me and made me slip away all the negative things I was focusing on before. A Ducati will do that to you. Then, one by one, almost incredible situations lined up. Not having had the chance to ride the Panigale V4R was a regret, and now the opportunity is there on the Barney Racing Team's bike. There are Showa suspensions, and since MotoGP's period, I've always felt great with those products. It's going to be a championship with only 6 rounds, all in Europe on tracks that I like, so it's going to be a limited and time-focused effort. If there was anyone who could convince me to come back, it was Marco Bernabo. I think the Barney team is the right team for me, a small family where there is a desire to grow, but also to have fun working with passion. I'm aware that I have a winning bike and the best components. Because of that, I would also like to thank Claudio Domenicali, Paolo Ciabatti, Gigi Delinea, and the entire Ducati team for this opportunity. Oh, like, man, it. That's going to be fun.
I like this a lot.
I do,
that's
too.
That's going to be fun. Superbikes is back next week, right?
It is indeed. Next week it is back. I can't remember where, though. I think it's at... We are coming back, Haref, July 31st. So not next week, the week after. Well, Superbikes will be back with round at Haref, back to back.
Oh no, it's Portimao week after August. Next.
Yeah,
yeah.
So yeah,
Haref, Portimao,
then Aragon on August 30th. Then we're going
double the Aragon.
Yeah, double Aragon, August 30th and September 6th. Catalunya makes its return to the World Superbike calendar on September 20th, and the final two races will be at Magny-Cours on October 4th. There are still possibilities of an Argentinian round on October 11th, a round as well, possibly at Misano on November 8th, and there's still possibilities of adding Assen, Donington, and Qatar back on the calendar later. Again, allegedly July 31st is the deadline for that. So we'll know in the next couple of weeks as to whether, you know, they get added or back onto the calendar or not. So stay tuned on that. We also got to talk, while we're hearing multi-bucks, we might as well talk about another big one.
World Super Sport.
World Super Sport, because this one caused a few shockwaves, mostly because of the statement involved Randy Krimenacker quitting his role with the MV Augusta World Supersport team. You might remember them as the team that had Raffaele De Rosa score a lot of solid podium finishes. We were all rooting for him in what we called the Yamaha 600 Cup last season. Raffaele De Rosa was on the MV, and we all rooted for Raffaele De Rosa. And Krimenacker's joined there this season and quit. I'll read out the statement, and this is crazy to say the least. Quote on the press release: Randy Krimenacker will not continue the 2020 season with MV Agusta Reparto Corsa. With this press release, rider Randy Krimenacker confirms his intention to dissolve his contract with MVRC due to serious breaches on the part of the company that compromise both the rider's performance as well as his professionalism, reputation, and personal integrity. That's just the first paragraph. Krimenacker has sent the company formal notification in which all the reasons leading to his decision are clearly outlined. Krimenacker has also moved to inform the competent bodies responsible for verifying any technical irregularities. The Supersport 600 World Championship title holder has reached this difficult decision after having carefully evaluated the risks involved in dissolving the agreement on one hand and the values for which he has always stood, personally and professionally speaking, on the other. Randy Krimenacker stated, "This is not a pleasant situation, and I never wanted any of this. The aim was to fight for the world title once more, but unfortunately the foundations needed to move ahead with the project with MV Agusta are not there. I have had to take this decision in order to preserve my moral and professional integrity, as well as my safety." Throughout...
This is like Andrea Moda shit.
Right. Throughout my career, I have always tried to do the right thing, giving it my all in any situation, even the most challenging. But this time, there was only one decision I could make. I could say more about my motives at this time, but further details will be communicated in due course. A crazy statement. MV Augusta has since responded a couple of days ago. Basically saying, and I'm just going to disable my ad blocker because GP1 doesn't like it when you have an ad blocker on their site. Thanks a bunch, fellas. The team came out with this press release of 3 days ago. In this regard, the team said this: MVRC SRL, which participates in the Supersport World Championship with the MV Agusta Reparto Corsa brand, in concession of use by MV Agusta, took note with amazement of the unilateral press release issued by Mr. Krimenacker. The accusations made by Mr. Krimenacker to MVRC are without any foundation. For this reason, MCRV is given a mandate to its lawyers to protect their interests, image, and reputation seriously affected by the initiatives of Mr. Krimenacker. End of statement. This is... In other words, lawyer up.
We're going to need to make our own beef history segment.
Yeah, in other words, lawyer up.
Lawyer up. This is going to be a spicy exchange. Just the language they're using.
Oh, dear. This is heated.
When the rider considers it morally bankrupt to not throw the team under the bus, it's something really wrong.
Yeah, his chief engineer even said, "I'm disappointed and surprised at Randy's decision." That was a statement released today. And Krimenacker said it was the team's fault that this has not happened, not the brand itself. Heated, shall we say, on that one. Just the three of us.
Okay.
We can make it if we try. We were just wrapping up the Krimenacker section, I believe, and was talking about Melandri coming back as well. So I will quickly explain via editor's note what happened, and then we'll go into the MotoGP section. Yeah,
we need to play the technical difficulties.
Due to 2020 related reasons.
Yeah. Perfect. I'll lead in with that. Okay, right. One sec. As Ryan King said, due to 2020 related reasons, as we now call this nickname the Corona Cord, sadly, RJ O'Connell had a power cut at his house right at the point of recording he just got up to right here. Sadly, his home internet is still down, but he gave us his blessing to finish the show without him. Chris also had to go off and set up his next set of 50 memes for the Discord. So it is just me, King, and Cam to close out the show. Sorry about that. yes. Let's wrap this up a little bit. We got a little bit of things to talk about in the news section real quick. Let's talk about MotoGP first and foremost. And after literal some weeks of waiting, it was finally made official. Pol Espargaró will be driving for Repsol Honda next year. Oh boy.
The worst kept secret in MotoGP.
Yes. But this was...
There's more.
There's more.
Because obviously, one, Mr. Alex Marquez, well, you don't necessarily want to piss off Mark too much, so he's going to LCR.
Lovely. But he's taking Cal Crutchlow's seat to do it.
Yeah, and Cal Crutchlow is none too pleased.
Ooh. Yeah, Cal threw his toys out of the pram a little bit. He doesn't think that he should be the one to lose his seat to Alex Marquez, and that the Pol Espargaró signing was a mistake by Repsol Honda, because, you know, signing one of the best riders in the world in your team is a bad idea.
In fact, Honda went out of their way to offer him a World Superbike ride, and he said, absolutely not, fuck off.
Yeah, because there's heavy rumors going around that Cal Crutchlow is going to be heading to Aprilia instead to take Aprilia's sweet rebuild money.
We all know why.
Yeah, it's if the hype regarding that bike is anything like they're predicting, that might end up being quite a smart move down the road. But we'll have to wait and see. I mean, thoughts on this in general, fellas? Is this the right move? Is it worth potentially pissing Mark off? You know,
I think it's the right move at the wrong time, because this is what they should have done in the first place.
Yeah, if they let off with this, it would not have ended up like this.
It would be a non-story. Like, oh, we've got a rookie coming into the satellite team on factory equipment, and we signed Paul to replace Lorenzo. Instead, you're replacing Alex, who is very close to his brother, who is the only reason Honda is doing anything.
Right.
And, again, Alex Marquez is still going to be at Honda for this season.
Yeah, and before you even turn a wheel in anger, you kick him down to LCR.
Oof.
It feels like, I know you put in your written article, it feels like the same arrogance that cost Honda Valentino Rossi, and boy did Valentino make him pay.
He did indeed. Winning the Yamaha factory their first championship in years, and four in the space of 6 years.
Alberto has no chill.
No, this is a power play from Alberto Puig. Like, make no mistake about what this is. He doesn't want Marc Marquez completely running this shit. I think this is a move that says, I'm still the boss around here, sunshine. And
to which,
yeah,
Mark can say, I'm the only reason you're winning. Bye. Right.
It's like it's almost like it's a king's ransom here. Pardon the pun, Ryan. But it's like Marc Marquez knows he's the only reason that Honda are competitive and are at the top of the field right now. Puig knows that, you know, it's the classic arrogance of, well, I think Honda's great, I run this team, and we can win without you. So much so we're gonna risk pissing you off so we can demote your brother for Pol Espargaró. Now, don't get me wrong, on paper, this is the better move for Repsol Honda. Pol Espargaró is an excellent bad bike rider. We've mentioned this numerous times on this show. But I'm not sure he was worth the risk over dropping Alex Marquez.
So that's it. It's really risky. Unnecessarily risky. And as we saw in testing, all the concern about Marquez being injured and the Honda being so unrideable he can't make it work. What does he do? He's the only rider in the 137s and the only Honda anywhere.
Right. So, yeah, it's putting all your eggs in one basket and then setting the basket on fire, because it's like you've made all this effort to make it Marquez's.
I can do what I want with it.
Yeah, it's like you've made it Marquez's team, and then you're like, but actually, sorry, it's not your team, Mark. We're going to sack your brother without him having ridden the bike in anger yet. It's a puzzling, needlessly risky move, as far as I'm concerned.
It's just typical Alberto now, isn't it?
More or less.
And this is the guy who shoved Hayden out of the team when Nicky Hayden defeated Valentino Rossi in his prime. And then is like, oh yeah, we're going to build the whole bike around Pedrosa. We're not giving you any real input. Oh shit. The bike is terrible. The 21-2 is terrible. I don't get it.
Yeah, I don't get it either. It's a very strange... We're not going to talk about this one too much, because we've kind of alluded to it on previous shows, but that is official. Yeah. And we're going to see some interesting dialogue between Marc Marquez's team and the alleged breaking of nepotism we've just seen.
I suppose the good thing here is that he's going to be on full factory equipment. That's been established.
Mm. Yeah.
And it's probably going to be less pressure on Alex competing for LCR rather than the full factory team.
Right.
But then why put him in the factory team in the first place?
Yeah, like, because don't get me wrong, Alex Marquez and LCR is probably a good fit. It's probably where he should have been in the first place. But you don't bring a guy up in desperation and then chop him on to the satellite team without even him taking part in a single race. Like, that's... Even KTM were like, we're going to give Ikel Lecuona two full seasons. Like, mm-hmm. like, you know, it's just the classy thing to do as far as I'm concerned. So props to KTM where that's concerned. Also, minor news story. Again, this one was kind of predictable. Frankie Morbidelli is back at SRT, in the Petronas team, for another 2 years. Signed an extension a couple of days ago. No real surprises from anyone in the room here.
You're all Petronas, shocked.
Petronas love this man. They've openly said now Fabio's gone, they're building the team around him. Even with Valentino Rossi, who... said today, as a time of recording during the first test, he's 99% sure he's going to SRT. They've just got to iron out the last kinks. Allegedly, it'll be announced when they race in Austria early August. So look out for that around that sort of time. It is all but confirmed that Rossi and Morbidelli will be the SRT Petronas team in 2021. And that'll be Valentino Rossi returning for his 25th year in World Championship racing. Good Lord. A literal generation of Valentino Rossi. Christ almighty. That is...
compete in three different decades.
It's funny we didn't even mention that Lewis Hamilton this weekend became the first man to only the second man ever to win a race in three different decades as well. 2000s, 2010s and 2020s. Only Jack Brabham has matched that, I think 60s, 70s, 80s. So that's a little fun factor today for you.
This is going to be for Rossi, it's going to be three different decades in MotoGP in the top flight.
Yeah,
Christ.
In top flight motorcycle race.
Remember, the man debuted in the top flight in 2000. Like, it's going to be year 20 in the top flight for Valentino Rossi, which is just... It's mind-numbing. That'll be his age 42 season. What a man. We mentioned a little bit as well, Cal Crutchlow most likely going to Aprilia. How did Aprilia luck into a situation when they might have Alicia Spargaro and Cal Crutchlow next year? I will never know.
Dirty Ian pissed hot.
We are waiting on the Court of Opposition for Sport case on that one. We do know that Bradley Smith will ride that bike for at least the first two rounds in MotoGP, maybe more depending on when this Court of Arbitration for Sport case comes out. They are seeing cases again now. They have reopened, hence the Man City decision you may have seen in football a few days ago. So stay tuned on that. I don't think we'll be too far away from an answer on Ian Oni's future. But yeah, it's looking like Carl Crutchlow going over there. And Alicia Spargaro and Carl Crutchlow, very experienced team. And that's a big one. That could be interesting. You could do a lot worse for factory team lineups than Alicia Spargaro and Carl Crutchlow, certainly. Formula E, real quick. There's been a couple of driver swaps talking about this. Now, we mentioned Sam Bird was leaving to go to Jaguar, which was a bit of a shock waver in Formula E, to say the least. Virgin have already announced a replacement king, and it's a spicy meatball.
Yes, it is one Nick Cassidy. Ooh.
RJ isn't here right now, but he is screaming in joy in the distance. Big Dick Nick, as he was christened on the show. Good signing.
Yeah, it is somewhat surprising from perspective of, like,
for it's out of left field.
Yeah, it's out of left field. Like, he did test for this team in the Formula E rookie test, but, like, the Formula E rookie test isn't necessarily for people who are definitely going to be in Formula E.
They clearly like what they saw.
Yep. And they decided, hey, let's get the Super Formula champion. Now that we lost Sam Bird, it sort of has been overshadowed by his fellow countrymen parting ways with his Formula E team, as, you know, breaking news that Brendan Hartley and Dragon are no longer under contract with each other.
Can racing companies please stop dumping Brendan Hartley, please? Come on.
he's got a Toyota WEC drive, whatever that's worth, which
still.
And again, it's effective immediately, meaning that Dragon will have to find someone someone for Berlin.
You mean you're gonna have to find someone to work under Jay Penske?
Has there been any reasoning given for this sudden release yet?
Nope. Kind of. He's been given the Futures Endeavors treatment from Jay Penske, where, quote, the quote he gave to the redacted, Jay Penske, "I want to thank Brendan for all his efforts, and I wish him success in his future endeavors. He has been immensely helpful in the development of our powertrain and overall program."
That doesn't seem like Jay got rid of him. So,
oof.
I'm curious to see who they put in that seat.
Yeah. But Dragon refused to comment on the situation, despite what Jay Penske said.
So the team owner commented, but the team refused to comment. Yeah. Interesting.
Doesn't make any sense. You'll have to see it.
And the fact that, Dragon are looking for a replacement, despite Berlin being less than a month away, it's very strange. Very, very strange.
Oof, indeed. Again, we don't know enough right now. If we do get anything on next week's show, we will let you know. Actually kind of gutted on this one now that RJ's not here, because we were going to let him speak about Super GT for a bit as well, and sadly he's not around anymore. I'm sure, RJ, you have my full permission. If you want to talk about Super GT for a bit, you can do so in post-production. No one will mind. but the week ahead, let's talk about what we've got looking forward to. We have the Hungarian Grand Prix in Formula 1. Looking forward to another Hamilton curb stomping on arguably his best track. So yeah, not fun on that one. But hey, who knows? It is Hungary. There are teasings of thunderstorms on Sunday. So,
oh boy! And so he's going to be, instead of being 6 tenths clear, he's going to be over a second clear.
Great! I can't believe I'm saying this. Hungry, please stay dry. Like, please don't rain. Stay dry, damn it.
While RJ might not be here, this weekend is Super GT's season opener at Fuji Speedway, and guess what? Everyone listening to this has an opportunity to watch the race, because it's going to be available for free on YouTube, thanks to the race.
Formerly known as Nismo TV.
Yes, yeah, Super GT has come home. Super GT has come home.
Thank God for that. We're actually going to get live coverage with competent commentary.
Don't know that part yet. Don't know that part yet.
Ooh. Please. Let's not push it now.
IMSA. Sebring, but not the 12 hours. Instead, we're getting the Cadillac Grand Prix of Sebring. I think it's going to be pretty similar format to the Daytona race. And very minor BOP changes, so LOL Mazda wins.
LOL Mazda wins.
So, and we get NASCAR. Yeah. Please don't chant racial slurs from the stands.
Please don't. Please.
Sadly, unfortunately, no promises.
Talk about someone who we're all a fan of here. Catherine Legg was injured in a crash over the week. Had surgery today on a broken leg. Please, no jokes in the peanut gallery. Along with a severely sprained wrist. Catherine Legg is a phenomenal driver and a great personality, and we all hope for a quick recovery for her.
Indeed. Speedy one to Catherine Legg. We love her on this show. I still remember that Delta Ring run at Daytona and just how friggin' awe-inspiring it was to see a woman steal the MVP of that race and make a lot of people take notice. We love Catherine Legg here. The very first stray brief I ever did was about Catherine Legg, and so I always have a little marquee for that one. We stan Catherine here. All the best. And again, we wish her a speedy recovery. And yeah, MotoGP, of course, is back as well. The first of its doubleheader at Jerez. Tends to be a Spanish-dominated track. All signs apparently lead to Marquez still being the man to beat. We'll have to wait and see. Who knows? Maybe Fabio.
Mild
shock, as they would say. So yeah, as we're recording this, MotoGP bikes will be back in official capacity tomorrow for FP1. So yeah, best of luck to everybody involved. I hope everybody stays safe. And yeah, again, good to see some racing again. So I think that'll just about do it for us on this doubleheader. Basically, you can find us one more time, youtube.com/motorsport101, facebook.com/line, same ending. Basically, you can find us on Twitter @motorsport_101, our personal handles @Harrison101HD, @RyanEricKing, @CBuckley917, at Cedar Harday as well, and @RJ O'Connell. Thanks as always, buddy, for putting these together. And our website, motorsport101.com, new blogs on there as well. And again, if you'd like to back us financially, you can on Patreon, patreon.com/motorsport101. $5 gets you early access to all of our shows. $10 gets you into the supporters club of our Discord server, where you can listen to these shows live as they go out. Thanks to everybody that chipped in. Thanks to everyone that was watching as well. We'll be back next week to break down the Hungarian Grand Prix, MotoGP's return in Jerez, more NASCAR, a bunch of other good stuff as well, and of course the IndyCar doubleheader at Iowa as well. So a lot of motorsport to get through. It's going to be coming through thick and fast with two C's in the coming weeks. But until then, I've been Andre Harrison. They've been Cam Buckley, Chris DeHarde, Ryan King, and RJ O'Connell. Catch you guys next week. Sayonara.
Bye.
More sports cars.